Hello and welcome to the Scene to Scene podcast. I'm your host, Valerie Complex, associate editor and film writer at Deadline. On today's episode, we have documentarian and storyteller Alex Stapleton. Now, Stapleton is an Emmy Award-winning documentary filmmaker known for her thought-provoking projects that have redefined authentic American-style storytelling across sports, music, pop culture, and social justice. In a career spanning more than 15 years, Stapleton has collaborated with some of the best documentarians in the business, releasing projects across all of the top networks and studios. Stapleton directed one part of the HBO documentary trilogy, God Save Texas, with her segment being called The Price of Oil. Now, this is a film series that takes the viewer on a journey through one of the most controversial states in the Union, guided by three directors, each with a unique perspective. Stapleton's installment chronicles the energy industry's impact on the African American community, told through her own personal lens and the experiences of her fellow Houston residents and her family. The film had its world premiere at the 2024 Sundance Film Festival and was released on HBO back in February. So it is available for streaming and to check out right now. She's also releasing a limited television series for HBO that shines a new light on one of the most prominent racial justice cases of the 1980s. And this is a four-part series on women in hip-hop. Coming up, she has a Music Meets Technology docuseries for Paramount Plus, which is based on the book How Music Got Free, which is produced with Spring Hill and Eminem. Now, today, Stapleton talks about the challenges of documentary filmmaking. She also talks about what she learned about herself and her family in the process of filming God Save Texas, The Price of Oil. And she also talks about why you, the listener, should be paying attention to what's happening in Texas. And with that said, let's get into it. If you like what you hear, be sure to review, like, and subscribe to the Scene to Scene podcast on Apple, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Thank you, Alex Stapleton, for coming on to the Scene to Scene podcast. Really excited to chat with you. And I'm really just curious to know how things have been post Sundance.
Wow. Things have been exciting since Sundance. Sundance was an amazing launch for the film. We have gotten, I think, really good write-ups, reactions to the series so far. Rick's episode, Hometown Prison, launched yesterday. And Ileana and myself, our films are live tonight on HBO, and you can operate on Max. So it's just been great to see the reactions rolling in and people really understanding, I think, what our point was. We were trying to navigate this space of like how we wrestle with Texas in our hometowns, but you know, a wake-up call for our fellow Texans, but also for the rest of the country, that these are issues that everyone should be paying attention to, because you know how goes Texas is how goes
right. You know, having traveled to Texas many times and about to travel again for South by Southwest, you know, you learn a lot about Texas on a very grand scale, but your documentary is very insular, one dealing with the community that you come from and your family and how what's happening there is sort of affecting everybody at every level. Can you talk about discovering how these different elements were affecting your family, you, and the larger community?
Yeah, you know, I definitely, when I started the project, the roadmap was a bit unclear. The conversation with Alex Gibney and Larry Wright and HBO was like, hey, we're going to do something about oil. I'm from Houston. Let's get into the oil story. And I think, you know, I started researching, you know, meeting with people, learning about the industry and its impact on Houston. But I was really looking at it on a macro level, like the whole city. It wasn't completely focused just, you know, at that point, just on my family and my, the neighborhoods. Mm. But what happened was COVID and the city shut down. And I was still living in Los Angeles, but visiting in Houston. So I got stuck in Houston during the lockdown and I was at my mom's house. And, you know, we had all this time together. And so I kept, you know, going online and trying to learn more and more and more about how I was going to, what my angle was going to be for the story. But and then I would talk to her and share my thoughts with her. And then she was like in the middle of like a bunch of discovery about our family. I mean, she's been doing genealogy on our family for like 30 years. So she gets so excited when she finds like a new piece of the puzzle. So we were talking about genealogy, and then all of a sudden the worlds just kind of collided where I was like, wait a minute, you know, I think that, you know, here I am trying to learn the history of oil and its history, you know, in the state. Spindletop is right, you know, an hour and change away from Houston. All of this history is like so well documented, like every single minute
right.
You can account for. But I'm like, where are all the Black folks in this story?
Right.
We were here. I know that, you know, my mother has told me that we've been here for seven generations. And I know that there were a lot of us here, you know, unfortunately, you know, forced to be here and enslaved and creating a, you know, a whole ecosystem, a dynamic, you know, financial system for this state and with cotton. So what happened, you know, and when the oil boom started and Spindletop, you know, changed the economy from, you know, cotton to oil, where was the Black story in all of this? And mm-hmm. I could not find anything. I could mm-hmm. not find any information on that. And so that's why I was like, okay, there's something here. And then the more I unpack, the more I feel like I started getting deeper with my family's story. And I just, you know, put one foot in front of the other and kind of discovered a lot of things that I really didn't have any prior knowledge of before making the movie.
Can you give the listeners some examples of some of the things that you discovered that surprised you?
You know, I think it's only been in the past, like maybe 10, 15 years that I've had like a lot of cousins that still live here that have been able to secure work in the refineries and at, you know, doing blue collar work at the refineries and chemical plants around town. And I thought that was really interesting because as I spoke to them, I was like, oh, no one wanted to be put on camera. They were all really afraid that like them associating with this movie would put their jobs in jeopardy. And then
right.
talking to them, you know, they would describe to me like their work environments, like I'm the only Black person, you know, like in my unit or, you know, what I do. And I, you know, I'm just lucky to like, to, this is a really good paying job. You know, most of my family, like some went to college, didn't finish, or just, you know, have a high school diploma, and the work can be good. You know, it can be really good, solid work, but it's also incredibly dangerous. And
when
you describe their working conditions, it's like, well, you know, I get forced to kind of do the things that like none of the white guys who have been there for generations, you know, their families, they're just born and it's like you've got three generations of families that work and do these jobs, but I get like the you know, the stuff that's more dangerous or more complicated or you know, when there's layoffs, I'm the first, you know, our people are the first to get laid off. We don't get permanent positions, we're temp. So just learning all about that and then getting the data to support like that we don't really have a big presence, you know, we don't really make up, we don't have a fair ratio of like our presence, you know, with those jobs. And I thought that was really interesting because that is the number one thing that industry will kind of like, that's the carrot that they dangle. Like, hey, we have to have all this, you know, stuff here because this is, you know, it creates jobs. It creates wealth for the community. And the more I started to dig into that, I was like, yeah, no, that's actually, that's a myth. And then on the flip side, it's like, well, let's look at what it is doing. And, you know, I met Dr. Bullard, who's the godfather of environmental, studying environmental racism, making that, you know, a subject to for us to all learn about. And I learned about all the pioneering work that he, you know, has done in Houston, dating all the way back to the 70s. And I was really floored and shocked to learn, like, this is so intentional. You know what I mean? Like, there's no accidents here. There's no mistakes that were made by
right.
to build in these neighborhoods, these Black and Brown communities that have been here for, they predate industry, right?
Right.
Like, but there's a really bad habit of the environmental, the waste, the all the bad stuff just flowing into these neighborhoods. So that was another, I guess, example on the other side. But I have to say, I do want to say, I also learned a lot of stuff that made me very happy because, mm-hmm. It's important. There's a lot of, the film is supposed to be like the good, the bad, and the ugly, but I
right.
don't kind of lose sight of like Black joy and celebration.
Right.
And I think that the craziest thing or the thing that made me the most happy was really realizing how my ancestors, you know, they were brought here, they were enslaved. And then, you know, my great grandfather was a part of, you know, building the first master plan Black community in America. He was a
wow.
And that was Pleasantville. That was his neighborhood called Pleasantville. And it, when I did the math, you know, I kind of like compared him to his grandfather who was a slave. And Pleasantville to where his grandfather was enslaved is less than 80 miles.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
And so just knowing that just gave me so much, I just have so much pride in like, not just surviving, you know, what my ancestors went through, but or what, you know, the collective, you know, as collectively as Black folks, what our ancestors have went through, but to know that in spite of all that, like this man bought a home and was able to put a roof over, he had 11 children and he was able to care for them and take care of them. And, mm-hmm. you know, and that was an incredible thing to learn.
So it's really tough sometimes when you go into, you know, the history of where you're from and how sort of there's this eco-racism happening. But, you know, being able to see some of the achievements and the joy and the accomplishments in that, because life isn't just sort of Black and white. There's always this, and you know, this gray area of things that we work within. And how does it feel to sit in tragedy and triumph at the same time?
I think I'm still trying it on, you know. That's something that I reflect on a lot now because I moved back home and you know, I'm living on the east side of town and I'm now like back in the community and being in New York and California for so long, I think I didn't have to, I knew these stories and I knew some, you know, I could like intellectually understand some of it, but I left Texas when I was 18 years old and I'm in my mid 40s now. So it had been a long time, since I was home. And I think being here now, that's probably, the thing I am trying to wrestle with, like, how do I not drown in the frustrations of, you know, how crazy things are still in this city. But like celebrate, you know, and pass down the great things about, you know, our legacy and our impact here in this city. And it's I think the answer is finding community. I think the answer for change is always rooted in community and making sure that you find your community, you expand your community, you share the stories with community, and community is family. You know, community for me, you know, includes, you know, Black folks in Houston, but it also includes like all Houstonians and all Texans. You know, like this is our shared history, and that's where I am today in sitting with that.
You know, I think a lot about the title of the project and yours specifically, God Save Texas, The Price of Oil. How would you define, this is going to be a crazy question, but bear with me. How would you define God Save Texas and how would you define The Price of Oil within the spectrum of your, of the story that you aimed to tell?
So God Save Texas, I will say for me, I inherited that title from, you know, Lawrence Wright, who wrote the book, God Save Texas. And I would say that for me, the title means the same thing that I think it meant to him. It's a prayer. It really is a prayer. God, please save Texas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the price of oil is understanding, you know, when we say Black Lives Matter and we've had this like national conversation, you know, in 2020, with the horrible murders that, you know, we all witnessed. I think that there's a synergy here with Houston, like that not only do our lives matter, do Black lives matter, it's look at what the cost is for this whole country and for the world to have energy. You know, I mean, it's like, it's almost like the price of oil is the human sacrifice, you know, that communities, Black and Brown communities, are sacrificing for all of us to be able to get our Amazon packages or to go on vacation and to, you know, to be on Zooms and to do, you know, to have our cell phones, to have our makeup, like, you know, all these things that are dependent upon fossil fuel. And I don't think that we really ever think about that. You know, I think that when we talk about these issues, we always talk about it on the macro level. And we, you know, it's usually, you know, an argument about, well, how do we get off of fossil fuels? And like, we should be doing more renewable, you know, energy. And all of that is great. But where are the humans? Where are the people that are paying the price for what it is today?
And I think that that's really interesting because the documentary skirts a really interesting line that I have not explored yet with chronicling the lives of people, the lives of Black people and ecological climate change. I think that there's a very, or, you know, dealing with these sort of environmental factors, not sort of climate change, and but Black people and these sort of environmental factors that exist. And I don't think that's something that gets explored enough. So I want to give you your flowers in saying that this is something that is, it's not new, but I think it's aware, you know, having the awareness is the best part.
Well, it's attached to, sometimes I think with issues when they're attached to a really freaking complicated, like how do you even fix this? Not that, you know, the like policing and all these other things that, you know, where I feel like when we talk about, you know, our civil rights, even like the, you know, the phrase, like, I can't breathe and understanding, you know, the origin of that. I feel like there's been an unpacking on a certain level of, you know, how over-policed our communities are. There's a conversation about, you know, the criminal justice system. I'm not saying that things have gotten better, but we've at least, you know, where people are having those conversations. And I agree with you. I don't think that the conversation about, you know, there are people in my community that are saying, I can't breathe. And it's because they are literally, you know, being choked,
right.
By polluted air, you know, for them and everyone in their family. And I think that it's important to directly correlate those things. I think it's important to not leave the environmental conversation off the table.
Can you talk to me about examples of challenges you had while actually making this documentary, technical challenges, logistical challenges, challenges you may have had with distribution, anything that you can sort of tell us that makes the whole sort of package of documentary filmmaking challenging.
Well, how much time do you have? No. I've been making docs for over 20 years now, and they're always challenging. They always, you know, because you start out and you think you have an idea of what you're going to get, and then you get into the edit and you start writing in the edit, and it becomes something different. And then the film starts to tell you what it needs to be. And as Ava DuVernay said, I heard her say this, you have to then serve the story. And I think documentaries are like, it is about serving the story at all times. You never get a break. And so in making this film, the first huge challenge was I was making it during the pandemic, during the first year of the pandemic, and shooting, you know, with DGA rule, like, you know, the unions were trying to figure out, like, how is it safe to even keep working? And I think, you know, as a documentarian, I think this has also been overlooked. The community of documentary filmmakers, we kept working all throughout COVID, most of us. You know, we didn't really ever get a break. We had like a little bit of time off, but like the media, everyone kept talking about the stop down of Hollywood, you know, but that was scripted films. Like the news kept working, and documentary filmmakers kept working. So it was really scary and really challenging to figure out like how to do that and to stay safe. And then to also stay safe. For me, it was like, how do I not get sick? But then how do I make sure that like my work is not gonna get my family members sick, you know, or anyone sick that I'm, you know, my crew, everyone. So that was really challenging. It was really hard. I think the pandemic on the other side in front of the camera, or like what was happening in real life, was that I was also witnessing my community. I witnessed COVID just wipe through my, you know, my community. And I lost two family members to COVID that are in the film. So that was really painful. We were filming and then there was a freeze, this crazy freeze that like the whole—
Oh man, wow.
On top of us just trying to get through COVID, on top of me interviewing my family that were just trying to get their homes fixed from Harvey. And so, you know, I make that point, or Dr. Bullard makes this point in the film, that these environmental disasters, it causes communities to just go into like deeper and deeper regression, you know? And then I was like living that with my family and, you know, trying to also know when to turn the cameras off. You know, when it just, there were some real things that I just like trying to get water, you know, to my family during the freeze. And there were just times where I was like, I can't film this because I'm just trying, you know, it felt like life or death in a lot of moments. And actually my other family member who passed away in the freeze.
So sorry to hear about this.
Yeah. So it was like, thank you. It was really emotional to like put this on camera, but then also be dealing with it as just me as a human being, and to be there and to figure out how to grieve while still making the project. So I would say that was a technical but also like human challenge. You know, it was like very much intertwined. Yeah.
If you had to list three things that you would want people to get out of watching God Saves Texas, The Price of Oil, what would those be?
You know, that's a really good question. And I think that for me, the answer is kind of layered, because I think it depends on what audience, you know, are you referring to. I am. First of all, for my family, we just screened the film here in Houston on a big theater in Fifth Ward at a movie theater, and all my family was there. And it was so special that our story, that my entire family and like my extended family. So there's a lot of people in that family that our story is, this one part of our story is preserved, you know, and that we were able to see ourselves on the big screen, and we were able to see like, oh, wow, look at all this archival footage, you know, look at us, you know, look at our family through the decades and how beautiful that is. And I hope that it inspires more families of color, specifically Black families, to preserve, you know, our archives and to hold mm-hmm. on to them, because it's important. And I hope that for my community and my family, that to kind of echo what I was saying earlier, I want us to be proud. Mm-hmm. But I also want us to realize like what we are dealing with, and that we don't have to take this, you know?
Right.
And here's kind of like my attempt to try to get us on the same page to start, you know, or to join the fight, because there's a ton of activists on the ground already doing this work, but to get involved. And I hope that that's also a message for the entire state of Texas, that we get it together, we unify to fight back against this government that is almost run like a dictatorship, you know, like every
period.
Every week it feels like there's just the stripping away of just basic human rights is insane to me, and that they're getting away with it. The fact that they are banning books, they are banning history, they are banning real history from children learning and stuff. My kid goes to public school here in Houston, and I have to like go through everything that he comes home with to like make sure that I can counter attack some of the, you know, bullshit that he's, you know, getting fed. And that is crazy. So to me, this whole series, not just my film, the whole series, Larry's book, it's all about like, we gotta band together and fight to protect our democracy. And, you know, it's a privilege. It's a right, but it's also a privilege, and it's not something that you get to just sit back and act just expect it to, you know,
go away. Right.
You know, I was born into a democracy, and I'm just going to have that. No, it takes work. And so the last community that I would say, the last piece of the audience would be the rest of the country. And I think that people outside of Texas, I hope that they watch this series, and, you know, including the price of oil. And I hope that their takeaway is that we're not like this monolithic culture where we all believe in the crazy stuff that comes out of like our senator and our senators and our governor's mouth. You know, like I think that our government is not really a true reflection of, you know, the majority of the people that live in this state. And instead of just throwing, you know, instead of being so cavalier and just being, oh, there's no hope for Texas, why even get involved? Like, you know, who cares? Like, they're doing this to themselves, you know. It's like, get involved, you know, join in the fight. You know, it's critical, it's mission critical, because this, what is happening in the state, is the blueprint for what they're already going to do for the whole country.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Alex, for coming on to the Scene to Scene podcast and, you know, being really open and candid about your experience filming something that is filled with so much, so many different things, and navigating that, you know, to the best of your ability with strength and flexibility in terms of being open to what you're hearing and what you're learning and what you're seeing. So I just want to say that.
Thank you. And that's, thank you so much. And thank you for having me. And thank you for all the work that you do and making sure that these stories, that people know about what we're doing.